Coming up on this episode of the Creeper Cast, we look into the funnier side of the Rambling Dead with 2004's Shaun of the Dead and 2008's Dance of the Dead in our Zombie 101 humor introspective episode. Also, Mike gives his thoughts on Marvel Zombies versus Army of Darkness on Captain Creep's Book Corner. Is Supernatural coming back for two more seasons? And what's happening on the set of The Walking Dead? All that, plus a grim bromance. So put down that cricket bat and load your machete, because it's time for CreeperCast, episode 107.
Hey guys, this is Bill Oberst Jr., the creepy guy, the creepy torso guy, on the CreeperCast. You're listening to CreeperCast right now with Jason and Jeff. There's no place else that you need to be. Do you hear me? Good. Don't make me go creepy on your ass.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Creeper Cast, now brought to you with 50% more Baby's Nightmares. I'm Jason, and with me again is Jeff and Mike. They just invented a new iPhone app to track their victims and see how they're doing years later. How's that been going for you guys?
It's been going great. In fact, you can download it right now on your iPhone app store. At your iPhone app store, we prefer everybody to do so right now. We'll wait.
Yeah, everybody needs to download this app. It just makes it that much simpler when we're trying to track you. I mean, you know.
Yeah, when we're trying to do stuff. Yeah, do stuff.
All right. Want to let you know to get a hold of us, give us a call at 503-454-6941. You can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. We're also on Stitcher at Stitcher Radio. Just search CreeperCast. And if you don't have Stitcher, get Stitcher, because you know what? It's awesome. It's mobile. And if you can listen to us anytime without having to sync up phones or download or any of that. It just works. Also, yes. Don't forget about the CreeperCast iTunes sweepstakes. Go to CreeperCast.com/iTunes or CreeperCast.com/TWD iTunes to get in on that. Once we hit 25 reviews, we will be drawing your name out of my proverbial hat or perverted hat. And you'll be able to pick your choice of any one thing out of the CreeperCast swag store. So, Jeff, what do we got coming up on this episode? What are we talking about?
On this episode, we are getting into Zombies 101 yet again with humor and introspection or expective or some kind of intro of some kind. Anyway, basically, these are the films that make us laugh because they pay homage to a lot of horror films, a lot of zombie films especially, and in this case, they are the very important Shaun of the Dead, and which has quickly become one of my favorite farces of a zombie film.
And I think Dance it has for Dead. Many people. I mean, it's basically what propelled Simon Pegg.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
I mean, before that, he was pretty big in the UK, from what I hear. But it was mostly like TV farces.
Yeah. And exactly. And then he followed up with Hot Fuzz, and pretty soon the last of the trilogy that they're calling their Three Flavors of Cornado, The World's End, will be coming out this year.
What about Paul? Wasn't that kind of a...
He was in Paul, yes.
Paul wasn't actually considered part of the trilogy, though.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know they were doing a trilogy.
Of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. And I think the point is that it's a... The point behind the trilogy is that it's all... It pays homage to a lot of film, you know, a lot of different films. We know Shaun of the Dead is a Dawn of the Dead type, you know, copy. Hot Fuzz was a Bad Boys thing. So I have a feeling that like the World's
End. Buddy cop movie.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that The World's End is going to basically be a farce on apocalyptic films.
Which sounds awesome. I can't wait. Yes. All right. So since we already mentioned it, let's go head into Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead is, you know, about a man who decides to, turn his life around by winning back his ex-girlfriend, reconciling his relationship with his mother, and dealing with the entire community that has returned from the dead to eat the living. It was directed by Edgar Wright, written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, and stars Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Kate Ashfield. I'm not going to go into what they were all in because, I mean, this is basically, they're kind of like Broken Lizard, you know?
Yeah.
So
definitely. Well, I think we can really quickly point out that Lucy Davis was in one of our favorite films of the last couple of years.
Yes, Lucy Davis was also in this, and she was also in Some Guy Who Kills People. She did an amazing job at that. So let's head into the trailer.
Do you ever think that modern life is not for you? Do you do the same dead-end job every day? Is your love life dying on its feet?
To a wonderful mom.
Oh, have you ever felt that you're turning into...
Slayer of the world?
A zombie. Maybe you're not alone.
Piss it.
Although no one official is prepared to comment, religious groups are calling it Judgment Day.
It is vital that you stay in your homes. Avoid all physical contact with the assailants.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Why have we got a girl, Lizzie?
Because I love her.
All right, gay.
Do something!
Wait there! Hold it there! I'm coming!
Here they come!
Sean!
Now, what's amazing about this film is that most people that aren't even into zombies love this film, and they consider themselves zombie aficionados because of this.
Because of this film?
Yes, I've seen it. I've seen more and more friends that really have no real background or knowledge of Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, you know, all of these zombie, you know, classic zombie, I say classic, but, you know, quintessential zombie films. But they've seen Shaun of the Dead and they loved it so much that that's what they think zombies are like.
I can't say that's a bad thing. Because it's a brilliant movie, and I guess that's a testament to its brilliance is that for those of us who are what I would call true zombie aficionados, this has everything that we could hope for, plus the humorous aspect, and like you just said, for those that aren't, you know, that now claim to be, even though they've never had any background, we both can look at this film with the same eyes and go, wow, this is brilliance.
It really is. So I'm going to let everyone in on a secret. I am the least prepared for this episode as I have ever been. So I have zero notes in front of me.
Wow.
Yes. but with that, I will talk about one thing that I like about Shaun of the Dead, though, is that it takes so many of the quintessential horror elements of a zombie film and satirizes it to the point that when you look at a regular zombie film, you think, oh yeah, that's funny now. Okay. one of the ones that I really like is when Simon's character Sean, he gets taken down by a female zombie, and he's on the ground and he's trying to fight her off as she's trying to bite him and stuff like that. And then Ed, played by Nick Frost, his friend, has a camera and he turns, it tells him to turn and look. And pictures. So there's like this, there's this comedic stop, you know, of action where they turn, shoot the shot, and then keep going. And I love, it's the stuff like that that I love.
One of the scenes I just absolutely love in this movie, and I love everything about this movie. I haven't watched it in a while, but I stopped to rewatch it, you know, for the show. And I was like, God, I miss this movie. I should watch this more often. I mean, there's just everything I love about this movie. The fact that, you know, when he's going to work that first day and coming home and whatever, clearly it's a social commentary on, you know, people already being zombies. You know, I mean, everybody on the bus looks like they're, you know, one of the Walking Dead anyways. But one of the first scenes that I just absolutely love is the after Liz breaks up with him and he and Ed go out partying all night, and then he gets up to go to the store, he's completely oblivious to the Walking Dead around him. You know, because it's the same thing every day. You know, the guy looking for change, he just kind of like, sorry, no change today. And it's just completely oblivious to the fact that the guy is a flesh-eating monster now.
Yeah. Well, even the way that he walks out and he kind of rambles out in the morning.
He looks like a zombie himself.
He looks like a zombie himself.
Right, yeah.
You know, which is kind of how I look before I get coffee in me.
Which is pretty much the way he was, because he had to go to the store, get his Yoo-Hoo or whatever it was and everything before he was awake. So it, yeah, I love the commentary aspect of it. I like the fact that it ties in with the whole Dawn of the Dead too, because there's even scenes that you could almost lift right out of Dawn of the Dead that they did in this, you know, inventive, creative way to make it look different. But I agree with both you on the one of the best parts about this is that these guys are pretty much, especially the first half hour of the movie, they're pretty much going out about his life as normal and are totally oblivious to the fact that all this crazy stuff has already happened.
Well, yeah. Not only that, but I think that one of the things I especially like about this movie is I kind of, one of the notes I had was, and I'm not sure what exactly we're saying, but at the beginning, I said, I love the bro talk, you know, the way they talk to each other. And these guys aren't, you know, what we typically see in a lot of these zombie movies, where you've got the alpha male who, you know, just seizes control, or there's military precision or whatever. These guys are just regular Joes. It's like, you know, if me and Jeff suddenly, you know, decide, you know, woke up, you know, after partying and went, oh, there's a zombie apocalypse, you know, let's try and get our shit together.
See, you can't lump me into that with you guys though.
Yeah, because you'd be all prepared and stuff, and that wouldn't be as fun as
I'd be the one with in battle fatigues and, you know, my AR-15.
One of my favorite scenes of the, or favorite things about this film is that do they ever touch a gun? I mean, that's one of the other ones.
Yeah, they do it in the end.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because they go to the Winchester.
Yeah, they go to the Winchester and they get the Winchester rifle.
I love that argument too. The whole argument about whether or not the Winchester actually works, the rifle that's hanging above the bar actually works. And that's one of the things I liked about this film though, is that they used everything within
right
their reach.
Right down to records.
Yeah, right down to records. And that was actually planned. That's the funny thing about that is what do you have as a weapon? It's like, well, I've got these old records. It's like, all right, let's use them. And you're like, what? And then they're arguing over which ones they can throw. You know,
that's the first one I ever bought.
Yeah, that's the first one I ever bought. And then he was like, well, how about Purple Rain? Nope, not that one. How about, and then I can't remember which one it was, but
they
it was
can
like,
get
yeah,
rid
that
of Purple Rain. Come on. Yeah.
It was great because it was also an argument over pop. I mean, there was a lot of pop culture references, and it was an argument over what was valuable pop culture and what isn't was going on at the same time, especially with the music. And then, like Mike just said, you got the whole thing about the, you know, it's a bro movie, but it's also about a guy, you know, trying to keep his girl. And he's the middleman in all this. So even though he has to do the step up, and he's going to fail at some point because everybody is out to, you know, help him fail, unfortunately, for him. But that's what makes it so funny as well. And then, of course, Nick Frost's character is just, he is the, you know, he's the one guy, the one friend that when you have a girlfriend, never comes over to the house.
Yes.
because your girlfriend's going to give you all kinds of help for him. And then, so you got this love affair between these two bros, and then you've got the, you know, him trying to keep the girlfriend. And then of course you have her uptight, you know, upper class or whatever you want to hipster for, you know, friends that are getting in the way of that. And one,
and I think we've all had that friend that's got those friends and you're just like, oh man, really?
And you're just like, oh God, it's that guy.
But one of the other things I liked rewatching this movie is, some of the things I hadn't noticed when I originally watched it. I don't know if you guys caught this, but Martin Freeman, the guy who plays The Hobbit, and John Watson in the BBC series Sherlock, made a brief cameo. Oh. And the woman that he was with was a character in two episodes of Doctor Who.
Yes, I noticed that.
And I was just like, hey, why do I know those people? And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, the Doctor Who reference makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I didn't actually. Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia and it does say Martin Freeman. That's right. He was a cameo.
Yeah, he was just in the. I
Duffel think Head he only. Dawn. Oh yeah,
I think
Lucy
he only
Davis.
Said like. I think he only had like one line or something, but he was with that group that blonde that he kept running into, and she was the one from Doctor Who.
Right. Well, yeah, there's a lot of names in this one, that if you were to. Actually take the time and oh man, Chris Martin from Coldplay contributed to the soundtrack by doing a guest cover of the Buzzcocks Everybody's Happy Nowadays.
Everybody's Happy Nowadays? That's not the song I pulled up.
you were making me worry when the song came up. I'm like, all right, you got the right idea, but
now, the only thing I saw that I question as a zombie guy is the first zombie, the one in the garden that they started throwing stuff at, when they pushed her over and she basically fell on that thing, it went right through her middle, which clearly when she stands up, she's got a giant hole in her. So she's missing literally a section of her spine. How could she still walk?
Honestly, with this film, you're really looking at that.
And just something I was trying
honestly,
to find.
No, you're looking at a farce film about zombies, and you're wondering how a woman can walk with it. You really think they thought that through?
I was trying to find something about the movie that was bad. Okay.
More importantly, do you really think they cared?
Oh, the other thing, is Ed doing a whole Eddie Haskell thing, or does he like actually want to like hook up with Sean's mom?
Oh, Sean's mom? That's a good question.
Because every time he talks, I mean, we see him throughout this whole movie being this loud, oafish ape of a man. And yet when they go to get Barbara, which he actually, somebody utters that line, we're coming to get you, Barbara.
We're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yeah, I love that.
When they actually get to Barbara, you know, he's like, oh, hi, Barbara. And, you know, he's just, I'm like, so are you playing Eddie Haskell or what's, you know, do you have a graduate thing going on here?
Well, he did always joke with Sean about, you know, the things that he would do to his mom and things like that. So maybe it was just a continuation of that. That's a tough one to ask. Maybe we need to get Simon Pegg on or actually Nick Frost on and ask him if he was hot for Sean's mom. He'd probably admit it, but he'd probably say he was. I'm just putting it out there. So, Nick, if you're listening.
Yeah. Nick, Simon, give us a call.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out, too, the history of this film when it comes to us three. And I don't know how well you guys remember this. But remember me scoring on Shaun of the Dead and, like, showing and making multiple copies and bringing it over to your guys' house saying, sit down and watch this now?
I don't think so, because I could have swore I saw it when it was in theaters.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
No, I think I remember. I think I remember you bringing it to me. but I'm also sure that we were in college and there was lots of booze involved.
Right. There was. Well, and also I paired it up with it, the other movie that I was making copies of and making people watch was 300, and you know,
which ironically I still have not seen.
Still an awesome movie. Just try to get over the fact that you're going to feel really gay when you're done watching.
All right. I think with that, that's it for Shaun of the Dead. overall, I got to give this 5. I can't give it anything but 5.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. The one thing I could come up with was the whole spine thing. So there's really nothing wrong with this movie as far as I'm concerned. It's definitely a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, when you're talking about a combination of Wright and Pegg, I mean, these guys know how to put together a film. Hot Fuzz was just as good. I'm sure The World's End is going to be great. You can't do this one any less than a 5. Even on a horror scale, and that's what I think is great, is that this movie does have legitimate horror in it. There are times when you're watching some scenes and you're just like, what the?
I mean, oh, absolutely.
You don't want to be in that. You don't want to be in that position that those guys are in.
No, especially near the end when, you know, it does actually get very horrific near the end. Mm-hmm. And it really, and you know, where all of a sudden it was like near the beginning and as it gets further in, it's this fun transition of being a comedy with horror relief.
Yeah.
To the end being a horror film with comic relief.
There you go. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's an excellent way to put it.
I wouldn't have gone with the excellent. We are talking about Jason here.
Hey. Give me credit.
It was okay, Jason. We'll give you that.
All right. Jeff, I got to ask you real quick. What's the song that they play, though, that do you know that song? The name of that song?
The song that they played, blah, blah, what?
It goes da-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-d I don't know. But that's what I was trying the whole time, trying to find underneath us to put underneath while we were talking. But obviously, well,
the queen was a good touch.
Yes. All right. I think with that, why don't we head on over to Captain Creep's Book Corner.
And you have reverted once again, Jason, to Captain Creep. It's Captain Creeper's Book Corner.
Captain Creeps. Sorry. Captain Creeper.
Okay, boys and girls, this week on Captain Creeper's Book Corner, we have the graphic novel Marvel Zombies versus Army of Darkness by John Layman and Fabiano Neves. I don't know. Usually Jason slaughters the names, but I was just guessing on this one. Excuse me. It's about 128 pages with the in the graphic novel form, and it was published in 2007, September 26th. Excuse me. Sorry. So the basic plot, this is it, true believers. The crossover of the century begins here. The Marvel Zombies come face-to-face with Dynamite Entertainment's Ash from the Army of Darkness. Like, you guys didn't know that. Ash has faced legions of the undead before, but never like this. As he lands in the heart of New York, just as the zombie outbreak begins. See how his actions help turn more heroes and villains into zombies. An intercompany crossover in which Ash Williams, hero of the popular Evil Dead film and comic books, finds himself in the Marvel Zombies setting, a world of flesh-eating, zombified Marvel comic heroes. So what are my likes and dislikes? Do I even have to say it? It's Ash. It's Marvel Zombies. All right, so after Ash dies in his world, in the comics, and if you're a fan of the Army of Darkness comics, they started putting out some new ones, so check those out. When he dies in his world, he ends up somehow getting kicked out of heaven and transported to the Marvel Universe just as the events of the zombie apocalypse starts. Now, and I can't remember how the events of Marvel Zombies unfolds, so I don't know how much of it changed with the introduction of Ash, like who zombified who and who wasn't zombified. But what I do remember is how typical of Ash, trying to help often leads to disastrous results, often due to women. But even our hero can't save everyone in the world overrun by super-powered zombies, especially when he realizes that they aren't the Deadites from the Necronomicon. This has the usual humor associated with Ash, and the artwork is surprisingly consistent throughout. And of course, Ash screws it up in the end, but you still got to love him. All right, so the bad part of this, it's Marvel Zombies. I only read the first trade paperback and gave it up because honestly, I thought it sucked. The heroes not only retain their powers after becoming zombies, but regain their consciousness and intelligence, excuse me, and they even feel regret about having to eat their friends and families in innocence. I don't even think the artwork was that great in the original Marvel Zombies, which, again, the armies, Marvel Zombies versus Army of Darkness, the artwork is consistent. It's really good. But the problem is the Marvel Zombies itself has spawned something like 13 volumes. But taking it all in together, this is definitely worth a read, especially if you're a fan of the Army of Darkness. I especially like how Ash turns the tables and gets a little revenge on that book that has plagued him for years. It's a really fun read. Like I said, it's got the humor. It's got horror elements. Just the biggest problem I had was Spider-Man. Somehow, even after being bit due to his supposed radioactive blood, is able to fight off the zombie infection, whereas characters like Wolverine or the Hulk, who have incredible immune systems, become zombified. And not only that, but, you know, he turns back from the Hulk into Bruce Banner, both zombified. So there are some problems.
Zombie Hulk sounds awesome.
Yeah, especially when they give the Necronomicon to him, and not for what you would think. Anyways,
Hulk.
It's like I said, it's a fun read. It's not very long. I give it a 4 out of 5, mostly because of the introduction of the Ash character and how he just kind of bumbles through, you know, trying to save everyone and ends up getting more people killed. I would definitely recommend going out and buying this. It's out in hardcover and paperback. And that is this week's Captain Creeper's Book Corner.
All right. Thank you very much. And now I think we should head on over to what's happening this week in television. All right, this week in television, we find out. Could there be a 9th season for Supernatural? Well, according to CW President Mark, I'm going to butcher this name, Pedouts, I don't know, something like that, Mark P., it could. During a panel at the 2013 Television Critics Association session, the CW Prez said Warner Brothers has finalized deals with Supernatural series stars Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki for up to 2 more seasons. This could mean Supernatural season 9 and 10 are a sure thing, or it could not. There's still many more people that need to get on board to make sure it happens. But what it does mean, after this spring, if Supernatural comes back, it won't be with the Winchester cousins or Winchester other brothers or the merging of Winchester DNA, kind of like the fall of Sliders. And thanks to this season's newcomer for the CW, Arrow, tentpoling off of Supernatural, Wednesday nights has been a hit for viewers. During the panel, Mark P. said, "With Arrow being a bona fide hit and Supernatural actually gaining viewers, creatively, the show is in a good place. There's always a good shot that it could happen. So I'm keeping my hopes up for Supernatural coming back." Also, from the Winter TCA convention, we get more details on CBS's adaptation of Stephen King's Under the Dome. Convention goers had a chance to see a teaser for Under the Dome and heard from author Stephen King and screenwriter Brian K. Vaughan. They said the 13-episode show, which will premiere June 24th, begins shooting in February in Wilmington, North Carolina, so everybody head out there right now, and will have promos out to the public during this year's Super Bowl. The teaser shown at the convention was actually an illustration of how graphic the show could end up being, with people and animals sliced in half by the dome landing, a plane crashing into the dome in midair, and townspeople ransacking supermarkets. Screenwriter Brian Bond said, also added that the dome will cause pacemakers to explode out of your body, which I really want to see. The synopsis of Under the Dome is about a small town that is suddenly and inexplicably sealed off from the rest of the world by an enormous transparent dome. The town's inhabitants must deal with surviving the post-apocalyptic conditions while searching for answers of what the barrier is, where it came from, and if and when it will go away. It deals with how long supplies will last in the town of Chester Mills, i.e. their food, their water, heat, and having no law. Basically, it's a depletion of everything we need to survive. The novel only covers a short period of time, but the series is planned to extend that to months. Under the Dome is slated to air June 24th on CBS. Elsewhere, Showtime confirms a summer premiere for Dexter Season 8, and NBC has released a new Grimm video highlighting the bromance between Nick and Monroe.
Think about this for one second. What would we possibly talk about? Oh, gee, guys, how did you two meet? Well, honey, it all started when I found out Monroe was a bloodbot.
Okay. Lighten up. I'm just making a point. Come on, let's grab a brew.
And that was right after I found out I was a Grimm. And by the way, did I tell you that I can see things other people can't?
Okay. So technically we would have to bend the truth about some things.
Some things. Monroe, name one aspect of our relationship that we wouldn't have to lie about.
Hey, Nick, Juliet, what a pleasant surprise. I think.
I'm sure it's nothing. I'm sure it's just. Nick, you're right. All the time we spent together.
So you come here a lot?
What, me?
No.
Yeah, sometimes. What's my favorite color?
What?
You know, you never ask me about anything else. Like sports or music or who the hottest Bond babe was. You know, like normal conversation. Just saying. Be nice to switch it up once in a while, you know?
All the sneaking around.
I told you to meet me, not eat me.
Could you get off me, please? I'm finding this a little, you know, awkward.
This is way too dangerous. Just call me, okay?
Okay. No, fine. That's the way you want it? Hey, Nick, I thought a vacation for you kind of meant, you know, vacation for me, too.
Hey, how was hot yoga? You pull a groin or anything?
My groin is fine. Thank you.
Your testicles has a kind of a Viagra-like effect on certain species.
God, suddenly it just seems so wrong.
We agree on a story, we keep it simple, and then we stick to it.
Yep. Simple story, stick to it.
Okay. So, how did we meet?
Well, in my experience, the best lies are sort of the truth.
And Grimm returns March 18th. And that's what happened this week in horror TV.
So I have to ask you this about your horror TV.
Okay.
Now, I haven't watched Supernatural, and we've discussed this, and you say I need to. But they're in, what, season 8 now is what you're saying?
Yes,
7. Are they in 8
Season 8, yeah, right now.
Right. Okay, so they're in season 8. You're saying they're talking to renew for 9 and 10.
They're kind of talking to renew for 9 and 10. At the very least, they have contracts with the two main actors so that we don't have to pull, like I said, a Sliders and put different people in there and come up with the idea that they merge DNA.
Right, which I liked the first couple seasons of Sliders, but yeah, when they got to that point, it was getting kind of ridiculous. I guess my question, I guess, is there are shows that they go for many years and they're still good. They're still worth watching. But then when you have shows like ER and Law and Order, where they've been on the air so long, there are no original cast members. And even if you have some original cast members, it's like, okay, we've seen this. It's time to put it to bed. Do you feel that at all with Supernatural?
No, Supernatural is actually really interesting in that, it's the progression that they have builds from each previous season. So even now, there's stuff that they're referencing from the early seasons. And it's one of these, like I say, strange shows that, you know, normally by the 7th, 8th season, it's ran its course. It's time to put it to pasture. But in this case, I don't see it, you know, fading out like a lot of other shows have. I can see it going, you know, another season or two. What I am afraid of, though, is they need to have an actual ending, because what they've done the last, I don't know, at least the last two or three seasons, maybe four, is that they didn't know if they were going to get renewed. So they made each season ending the series ender also.
Right. And that's, you know, my frame of mind, I guess, is, you know, as much as I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show was canceled, what, twice? You know, switched to 2 to 3 different networks.
No, it was only switched to UPN after the 5th season.
Yeah.
That was it. Oh, right. And it was only canceled the one time.
Okay, but you see what I'm saying? It kind of ran its course.
I don't know. The 7th season of Buffy was amazing. 6th season, not so much. 7th season, right. Great.
But they ended on a high note. You know, right. I mean,
and that's where I'm afraid of what I'm afraid might end up happening if they do keep it running too long. So if what my plea to Supernatural writers, producers, Kripke, since you're the one that is the showrunner for it, what I would say is please, please, please sign a contract, have an actual ending in mind, and make the next 2 seasons build just towards that ending.
All right.
And
that would actually lead me to a question, because I've had this discussion before, is that doesn't this season, though, feel like it's kind of meandering right now because they're still trying to find their footing?
It is, because last season was supposed to be the last very final, right. And now all of a sudden they're like, well, crap.
And they don't have a lot of the same people behind it as they used to. So
no, I mean, Eric Kripke left. Right. He's now doing the Apocalypse show on NBC that I wanted to do a podcast for, and now I don't
Revolution.
Like yeah. Revolution. Uh-huh. You know,
is that still on?
I don't know. But
it's supposed to finish out its season. That's the last I heard.
But you know, so he's moved on to other projects. He's still overseeing it, but they do have different writers for it. The new writer, one thing that I do like with the new writer is that they did bring it back to kind of the essence of the beginning of the series, which is a zombie of the week show. Mm-hmm. You know, the beginning of the series was, you know, the over arc was they're trying to find their dad, this type of stuff. But then the essence is they go to a town and they help people with their problems.
Yeah, the monster of the week.
Monster of the week. Last probably season or two, they've done away with the monster of the week and dealt too much with angels and devils.
Right.
So I like that they went back to the monster of the week episode and kind of pepper in the stuff about Kevin and, you know, the devil and stuff like that now, who I guess isn't the devil because the devil's still technically fighting Michael. It's I can't think of his name, the demon that took over. But either way, I like that they went back to, you know, it does have a slightly different feel, but I still think they're doing great, and I'm loving this season.
All right, and that leads me kind of into my next question. You mentioned the Stephen King Under the Dome, which, as we all know, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, but a lot of times his TV stuff doesn't quite work. What were you saying about, because the essence of the book takes place over the course of, I want to say a week or two, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I learned from reading this. I've never read the story, but this one is supposed to take place. The 13 episodes is supposed to take place over a few months.
Okay,
they're expanding.
Yes, they're expanding. So basically,
but it's only going to run to 13 episodes. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to turn out to like the Dead Zone where we try and take a book and run it for 4 seasons.
It's no, possible. In fact, the first season of the Dead Zone was awesome.
I think that's what they're intending, though, is that they're hoping that it'll get picked up for a second run.
Yeah.
Oh, God, please don't.
So it does seem like they're aiming for that in the long run. But really, they're just going to use the book as the template. And then they want to expound upon what's already been created. And King's 100% behind it.
Yeah, King's actually the one, from what I've found, is you have Stephen King and Brian Vaughn. That Brian Vaughn is a screenwriter for it, but King's actually been, he's been working very closely with King.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, and I guess for this book, it would work better, you know, because you could extend it over the course. There's so many things that you could do with this, as far as depending on how the size of the town that they create and what have you. It could work a lot better than what they did with the Dead Zone.
I do like the fact, though, that as Brian Vaughn put it, if you have a pacemaker and you get too close to the force field, your yeah. heart explodes.
That just seems like it'd be awesome to see.
Well, yeah, it'd be awesome to see. I'm just curious how, you know, since it's going to be a television thing, how graphic they're going to let it get.
You know what? From what it sounds like, this is going to be pretty graphic, at least the opening of it.
So, I guess, and all that in the end remains to be seen.
But it is a summer 13 run show, you know, and, you know, I'm going to assume that they try to encapsulate the 13 episodes as kind of like a really long miniseries, so that even if it doesn't get picked up, at least you don't feel cheated.
Well, see, and that's the other thing, you know, I mean, if they want to expand it beyond, you know, an original 13 episode run, there's two things that are going to happen. Two things that are going to happen. They're either going to, because of the way the book ends, obviously, if they run the 13 episodes and they give us the ending, then there's no point in doing, you know, never mind what the ratings might be. If they give us the ending, then it's over.
Oh, you know, in television, the ending's never really the ending.
You know, and then if they plan on doing a second season or a third season or whatever, and they don't give us an ending, and then it doesn't get picked up, then we're left hanging. You know, we've talked about this so many times about so many different shows that they do that.
It's the series dilemma. You just have to wait to see what happens, I think.
Yeah, see if they can write their way out of the corner.
All right, that's all I got to say. So let's move on.
All right, with that, why don't we head on over to the news?
The box office weekend may have belonged to the hunt for Osama bin Laden, but dick, fart, and pot jokes helped the Paranormal Activities spoof A Haunted House open big in second place, which is interesting in comparison to the true horror film of the week, which was Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D, which got massacred and nearly dropped out of the top 10 within a week after topping it.
I have not heard one good review about that movie.
It's hard to imagine that there would be one. Last weekend, a lot of people were given a lot of flack for the Texas Chainsaw 3D's box office prospects. And now it looks like that everybody who was saying that their prospects were really low were right. In fact, even though it's topped as the number one movie in the country, opening at $23 million a week later, it's already at $9 million. With only $5.15 million, horror movies that open big tend to drop big in its second week, but a 72% drop? Yeah, that's a pretty bad average. In fact, according to Box Office Mojo, that Death Plunge is roughly equal to the one that was suffered last year by The Devil Inside, a movie you might recall with an ending that so infuriated moviegoers, there were reports around the country of audiences booing, throwing things at the screen, and even spitting on the ground in disgust.
Isn't The Devil Inside what we reviewed last week?
Yes, we did. We didn't do it last week, but we have reviewed The Devil Inside. I believe we did anyway. We might have to look back at the archives or have somebody from
sure
our
last week's thing with head. The for our that was the one. What was it with Bill O'Burst that we just reviewed?
No. This is a different Devil Inside. You're confusing Devil Insides, and actually, you're talking about The Devil Within, Rise of Evil, which was a good movie.
You're right. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
So the bad news that follows along with this one is that they are talking about another sequel to Saw. But
so
fortunately,
what is that, like 50?
Yeah, Saw 50,000.
And he's been dead since like the third movie. So,
no. But if A Haunted House has taught us anything, it's that Scary Movie 5 is definitely going to get bring people into the theaters and maybe, you know, make them like horror, or at least horror spoofs like the ones we're talking about today, a little bit more. And now my computer locks up on me. But in good news, Jurassic Park 4 is well on its way.
Yeah, I just saw something about that. I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay, because my computer went to crap.
Well, I
need
just
to restart
say
it every now and then, you know that.
There we go.
No way I'm going to go see whatever that Marlon Wayans movie is.
It actually looks funny. The trailer looks pretty good. I mean, it's a Paranormal Activity spoof, and I am a fan of spoofs of movies of I don't like. And I'm not a Paranormal Activity fan, so this one looks really good to me. But after years of rumors and speculation about a fourth film, fans of Jurassic Park franchise understandably wondered if it was truly extinct. Well, Jurassic 4 finally got some legs when Spielberg met with writer Mark Protasevich to go over story ideas a couple years back, and the project really started to take life when the studio hired the husband and wife writing team of Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver to pen the screenplay. So, unfortunately, it looks like they are looking at a June 13, 2014 release. Again, we do have, a year and a half to hope that it will bomb between now and then. Next up, Bill Pullman says, the president of the United States in the new NBC comedy 1600 Pen might distract people a little bit from the idea of the new Independence movie. Independence Day movie, that is. Remember I spoke about this a while back that...
Yes.
That Emmerich and Devlin are about to put together this two-part story idea that will cover the sequel films titled Independence Day Forever Part 1 and Independence Day Forever Part 2. Everybody's jumping on this whole, thank you, Lord of the Rings.
I thought we beat them when we nuked their ass.
Well, and that's the thing, is I guess this is supposed to, the Independence Day movies are supposed to take place a year later. So it's, and I guess what they're looking at is that Pullman is going to return. He's said that he will return as the president, and we are going to be dealing mostly with him. He does say that the chances of Will Smith coming back are very limited or next to none. And it's probably going to be more of a President Thomas J. Whitmore film. Which I think is interesting now, because even
you know what they should have done? They should have made Will Smith the new president.
That's, yeah. Well, he looks a lot more like the real president.
Yeah, well, and but that's not just the reason, because he's the one that actually saved the world.
Well, take
it an election year.
Technically, yeah. Jeff Goldblum was the one that yeah. saved the world.
Yeah, technically.
Well, okay, but nobody cares about the man behind the man.
No, the best part about this is that we're going to be following President Whitmore. While at the same time, we already have Pullman playing the president on an NBC comedy, 1600 Pen. They've been discussing about how this might affect him being a president in the film again as well.
And
which is,
he's running for president in 2016.
Yeah, and he's running for president. So, I mean, everybody might be against the whole idea. It's interesting that, I don't know, I think it's going to be, especially if 1600 Pen keeps going for the next 2 years while they're making the new Independence Day film, who's going to go to a new Independence Day film expecting Pullman to be the 1600 Pen president?
They should just merge the two. Have on 1600 Pen, have aliens come and bomb things. And then that's the jumping off point for Independence Day 2.
Yeah, that would be great. Last but not least, everybody knows about the rocky world of The Walking Dead. Don't we? Yes, that's yes. Right. We remembered and commented a lot on the fact that when Darabont got released, or fired, as Darabont would tell you, from The Walking Dead after the first season, well, it appears that now that that season 3 is in full swing, it's time for the annual showrunner must get fired.
It's kind of like a reality show, isn't it? Like, you know, they get voted off the island.
It is starting to turn this way. Now, this is my concern. Now, of course, you know, Glenn Mazzara has received the honorary pink slip. And there's a lot of questions that come to mind about this. I mean, first of all, if you've been following The Walking Dead as strongly as we have, especially with The Walking Dead Week in Review, you would understand how often we mention Mazzara's face is at, like, I mean, he is the superhuman publicist for The Walking Dead right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's the one that everybody knows.
Right. And he's like always, you know, he's more than happy to put himself in front of the camera, in front of the, you know, reporters and such. And is actually very artful at misdirecting questions and things like that. Well, as it turns out, it seems that Robert Kirkman, comic book creator Robert Kirkman, has decided that Glenn Mazzara isn't needed anymore. So maybe that's a concern for most parts. I mean, I'm really beginning to think that... I love Kirkman and believe that he wants to maintain a certain amount of, you know, credit and everything and keep it as close to the comic books as possible. But he's also learned that he has to expand this multiverse that he's created, or this universe that he's created. So
it really is a multiverse.
Yeah, it is a multiverse. And so he's given in to certain things that working in this with the television show has done, you know, has caused him to have to rethink story outlines and things like that. But to think that he could actually just take full control at this point, I think is a little too soon. let's just put it at that. I mean, I don't want to think that Kirkman's out to out to kill his own show. But then again, we are looking at a show that's been dealing with a lot of problems. Like the last half of season 3 took forever to complete because they were having tons of problems with production schedule. They were having problems with the amount of money that was being spent on it. Plus, they kept getting their budget cut and things like that, which Mazzara was obviously doing a really good job keeping up with. I'm not sure if this means that Kirkman is going to try to do it all himself.
Yeah, let's throw a comic book guy in as the showrunner for a TV show when he has no real experience.
Right. Well, and you can argue the point that since Robert Kirkman created the Walking Dead comic, he probably has the best ideas as to where the story is going to go and will keep it true for the most part. But they haven't found the right showrunner apparently to bring his Kirkman's idea to light. I would say that, you know, I think we can still go back to Darabont and blame him for creating such an awesome first season.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it's really hard to follow that given the restraints that AMC
you need
is
some
now
water.
Putting on the show. Yes. Given the restraints that AMC has now put on the show. But at that, I guess we'll see. I mean, we're what, 4 weeks away from the last half of season 3. We'll see what if the budget cuts and such really affected the way we see the show. And then the next few seasons, which they were signed for season 4 and 5, it could be fun.
All right. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. And with that, I think it's time we head on over to our next show so Jeff can get a drink of water. I say show like it's a TV show, but I'm talking about a movie. The next movie that we're talking about is 2008's Dance of the Dead. On the night of the big high school prom, the dead rise to eat the living, and the only people that can stop them are the losers who couldn't get dates to the dance.
I know this is last minute, but will you please go to the prom with me?
Ew, get lost, Jimmy.
You will remember tonight.
Your prom ticket.
We don't have dates to the prom.
I was gonna go, but then my day 8 got spinach.
Wow.
Come on, Steven S.
You're the four, Steven.
Did you guys hear that?
Oh, hell.
From the creative minds behind 30 Days of Night and the Grudge movies.
Why is this happening?
End of the world. God's flushing the toilet.
That was disturbing. If we don't stop those things from getting to the prom, then our world is over.
Little lady, you'll get the machete.
but I don't know how to shoot a machete.
All right, where y'all going?
To the prom to kick some zombie ass.
Who are you guys?
We're the Sci-Fi Club. We're here to rescue you.
Yeah! Dance of the Dead.
Wish it was a corsage.
All right, Dance of the Dead is directed by Greg Bishop. It's written by Joe Bellarini. I think that's how you pronounce his name. It stars Jared Kuznich, who was also in Prom in 2011, Dial Graveyard in 2005, and Otis in 2008. We also have Grayson Chadwick, who was in Why Did I Get Married in 2007, Daddy's Little Girls in 2007 also, and Black Marigolds in 2012. Rounding things out, we have Chandler Derby, who was in Sons of God's Prologue, whatever that is, in 2007, Christmas Cupid in 2010, an ABC Family original, and Dixie Times in, it says 0000, so I'm going to assume that it was made at the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
And so with this, I'm going to actually let you guys take over, because as much as I wanted to watch this movie, and it's, I still will watch this because it looks amazing, I didn't have a chance to see it because I try to watch things on Sundays, and my son going into the hospital, and then my internet freaking out on me, I just didn't have a chance to do it. So take it away, Jeff and Mike.
All right. Well, I'll begin with the fact that the movie starts like Cemetery Man. Mike, are you with me on that one?
I think we watched that in class, but I don't really remember.
Oh, okay. Really? I love Cemetery Man. That's one of my favorite zombie movies.
We're actually going to be talking about it in the future. Yeah, so you'll be able to get the reference. Well, you'll be able to get the reference later then, I guess. But it started like Cemetery Man. You have a grave digger or a graveyard keeper who knows that the local nuclear plant is causing strange things to happen. And as soon as a hand comes up out of the ground, he cuts it off and, you know, disposes of them.
Goes on his merry way.
Goes on his merry way like nothing ever happened. I mean, it's a straight up ode to the Cemetery Man. But and then it just goes on from there. Basically, I kind of see this film as another Return of the Living Dead, because they took every bad idea of a zombie and put him in this film.
Yeah, were these like super zombies or what?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
They come like exploding out of the ground, yeah, and they drive.
They come exploding out of the ground. They steal one of the kids' truck and drive away with it. And this is one of those too where we can get into the argument about, you know, do these really qualify as zombies, or were they going over the top on purpose? I think you still have a lot of homages to zombie films that came before, but like I said, they were one of the homages that they went for were the most unrealistic or most, you know, ridiculous. Because like you said, exploding zombies. I mean, these zombies move faster than, you know, Dawn of the Dead.
28 days later.
Yeah. I mean, and these are dead people, like right up out of the ground. It's also a case of like, apparently, as long as the brain is still active, the rest of the body can still function. And yeah, communicates with and can still communicate with the disembodied pieces. So,
well, and this is the first zombie film I've ever seen where it's apparently not just the humans that are coming back, because as much as I can't even say I hated or loved this movie, but I love the fact that the zombie frogs, you know,
right?
Because
we saw that in Return of the Living Dead though, because we had the half dog.
Okay, see, that was one I didn't see. So,
yeah.
But yeah, there were so many things about this movie that I wanted to like, and then there were things that I actually did like. So I'm just like, did it suck? Did it not suck? And one of the things that, you know, like you said, the, you know, homage to not only zombie films, but this was at one point, I think I had the thought in my head, this was like the zombie version of American Pie.
That's interesting.
You know, and they always show like the teacher, the biology teacher that, you know, was like berating the kid in class. And they show this kind of thing in these movies, these teen movies, all the time. And now, granted, it's been 20 some years since I was in high school, but I never came across a teacher like that. And I don't know if it's just kind of a, you know, a stable of teen movies that we have, you know, this kind of teacher to make the students look better. And then it led into the whole detention where he's staring at the wall. And I'm like, detention for me was homework. You know, you sat in a class, you didn't talk, and you just did homework. So I just, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's where you were getting the, you know, again, where I talk about it's an over the top. I actually thought it was like a Breakfast Club with zombies, more or less.
Right, but, yeah.
So you had to have the over-the-top aspect, which was where the teacher and the coach come in, and that's also added huge humor, especially with the teacher and the coach, because the coach turns out to be like this huge military nut, and, you know, with his help, they end up blowing everything up. And there's a lot of ridiculousness in this film, like the whole idea that just because it's prom night, that's obviously where all the zombies are going to go.
Right, yeah. I'm like, and they have a beacon?
Yeah. Well, it's like every kid in school is going to be there. So it's like Thanksgiving for zombies. You know, they mentioned that. And you're just
But it's like, what about the rest of the town?
Exactly. I mean, hopefully there's a rest of town. I mean, this had so many things going for it in ridiculousness factor. And then it had some stuff that I really liked, even just take away the ridiculousness of it, is one of my favorite scenes that I've already – this is what last year I put out my top five sex scenes in a film. And you can find it at creepercast.com. I'll make sure that it's in the notes so you can see it again. But this wasn't a sex scene. That's why it only got honorable mention. But the scene with the nerd and the cheerleader in the bathroom stall.
I actually have that written down in my notes. I thought that was, you know, never mind the fact that she didn't actually die. She just, you know, in the middle of making out, she became a zombie. But in a weird, creepy way, it was kind of sexy.
It was pretty hot. Especially when they start eating each other afterwards.
Right, you know.
They're just tearing away at each other and everything. But my favorite part, though, was when she, like, you know, they're making out, and then she rips back with his tongue and then, like, slurps it up like a piece of spaghetti.
And, you know,
And the music thing, I mean, there are so, like, it's also a callback to Frankenstein, because you had this punk band that, you know, had to play for 5 hours in order to keep the zombies from wanting to come eat them, because, you know, music tames the savage, you know, the savage soul, which you're hoping dead people don't have souls. But anyway, I mean, you had a Frankenstein callback going on there. And then when they actually get saved from all the zombies, they're like, are you crazy? That's the best practice session we've ever had.
Yeah, I know. There were, like I said, there were things that I really wanted to like about this movie. But some of the stuff that I had a problem with, what was the dude's obsession with vanilla bean air fresheners? I mean, because apparently that was the most awesome thing in his life. And then this was a first for me in any movie, teen movie that I've ever seen, where we're dealing with a dance or a prom. They went to the lookout place and almost had sex before the prom. Usually it's after the prom. So that was kind of a, you know.
But you got to love the fact that you see kids running through the cemetery, and then you see them go to the lookout point, and it's supposed to be the best place where you can see everything, and then you suddenly discover that the place where you can see everything is in the cemetery.
Well, yeah, of course.
Because they didn't give that away at first.
Yeah. some of the stuff that I didn't – like when the kid went to go to the prom, when his mom is like, you know, have a good time. Don't get too – I rewound that like three times, and I still couldn't figure out what the hell she was saying. Was she saying don't get too crunk? Same kid, you know, when they're wearing – they, and of course this was kind of with the ridiculousness of this movie. The one house that they end up in happens to be a funeral home. I'm like, really? Okay. And so they're trying to decide who should run for it. Now, this whole thing didn't make sense to me because as far as I could tell, they all should have just run for the car. But the one guy's like, I have a wooden leg. I'm like, what?
It was everybody making excuses as to why everybody's excuses as to why they couldn't do it. And so it's the total opposite of what you normally get it was playing on the total opposite that you normally get in a zombie film or a film of its nature is that usually everybody's like, oh, I could do it. No, I could do it. No, I can do it. In this one, you had everybody was saying they couldn't do it for some reason. And everybody looked at the cheerleader because she's all athletic and everything. And I like the way she put it to the guy that was hot for her, which is, you know, when he says, you don't have to do this. And she looked at him and says, are you going to? And he's like, no, not really.
Well, and then continuing with that scene, though, she runs out, you know, and they're fighting the zombies on the porch.
It's amazing.
Did she have to move the car? Because I thought the hearse was right there in front. I mean, where did she move? Did she drive around the block or something?
I don't know.
I mean, watch the movie.
The important part is that she did somersaults to get there.
Well, yes. You know.
Buffy style?
Yes.
Sweet. Yes. Like when I say Buffy style, I mean movie Buffy style.
Yeah, she actually even did like the flip right into where she ended up kneeing one of the zombies and landing on him.
Okay, I really have to watch this.
And then ran away. I mean, it was pure ridiculousness. I agree. It's part of what made it so fun, though. I mean, if you can't figure out right from the beginning of this film that when the guy is obsessing over his vanilla bean air freshener.
Yeah, he mentioned it, what, 3, 4, 5 times? You know, I got vanilla bean air freshener. And then he picks up vanilla bean, baby. And I'm like, what is the deal with the vanilla bean, man?
Well, and I would say that most of that is because she's dating a guy that delivers pizza. So he kept pointing out that, what, do you want to smell like do you want to smell like pepperoni or do you want to smell like vanilla bean?
Pepperoni.
He was desperate to try to hook up with this girl is really what it was.
Well, and was it just me or, you know, okay, yeah, their relationship had problems, but, you know, because of a corsage, she dumps him the night of prom and then starts going out with this other, you know, starts hooking up with this other guy. Like, are you kind of a whore or what?
But this is more of a Shaun of the Dead type situation too, though, where, you know, she dumped him because he never took life seriously and didn't look like he was going to do anything with his life because all he did was, you know, joke around and blow everything off. And so we're kind of looking at a young Sean dealing with his first girlfriend, so to speak.
Well, and like I said, I get some of that. It's just, you know, the fact that, you know, and I guess what it comes down to is the corsage, I guess, was basically the camel that broke the, or the straw that broke the camel's back.
No, I like your first one, the camel that broke the straw's back.
You know,
yeah, straws aren't as tough as we thought they were. Yeah.
You know, that was just kind of the breaking point where she's like, okay, well, I'm not going to prom. I'm like, it seemed a little, again, ridiculous that she would, you know, she would do it, but, you know.
And I would argue that that's the point of this movie, is to be as ridiculous as, I mean, at least they didn't go the, you know, the scary movie, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 route and make the ridiculousness so ridiculous that you're like, what the hell just happened?
Right. But I guess one of the best things I liked about this movie is, you know, the whole goal for 3/4 of the movie is to get to the prom and save everyone. And they get to the prom and everybody's already dead.
Yeah, right. Well, there's a few,
well,
apparently.
Thanks for giving that away.
Well, it's not the end of the movie, though.
Yeah. No, there's still some to save. I mean, I think there are some really good, funny scenes in this, though, that just make you go, okay. Like when you can start right at the beginning with the people, you know, running through the graveyard and zombies exploding out of the grave, literally Buffy style exploding out of the grave. I mean, not just digging themselves out. They just like,
yeah, it's like they're launched out of an underground cannon or something.
I mean, which is great. And you got the two guys stealing the pickup truck. One of my favorite scenes is when they're actually at the prom and the guy and the girl are like trying to get the remote in order to blow the school up. and they end up dancing and everything because that band comes out and starts playing.
Yeah.
So they're like, there's like zombies, like a gymnasium full of zombies doing the swaying around with each other while these two are enjoying prom.
All right, so what are your reviews? What do you, Stabs? What do you give it?
I got to give it a 3 out of 5. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but, you know, it wasn't great either.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 on the Return of the Living Dead rating scale because you can't rate these kind of films on the same scale that we rate all zombie films. I mean, the ridiculousness of it made it that much more fun for me is that, especially because they set it right from the beginning. I mean, when you see the cemetery guy and the cloud of nuclear gas floating around, you know this can't be taken seriously. Right. And that makes it great.
So before we go, I want to ask you guys something since we're talking about Zombies 101. I want to get your guys' opinion on this. Do you think Night of the Living Dead zombies, where they come out of the grave like that, could happen anymore? Since now, basically, when a person is, at least in the U.S., is put into a grave, one, they're completely embalmed, and then so they have no circulatory system. Then they're sealed in a casket that locks, that's made generally of metal, put into a tomb-like thing that has made out of cement, where cement is
cement
actually...
Cement vault, yeah.
Yeah, cement vault that's put around them, and then covered with 6 feet of dirt.
Nobody wants to bite.
I guess my thing is, you know, I see what you're saying, but even regular casket, depending on how old the corpse is, you know, it depends on what kind of strength you're prepossessing that they have. You know, can they eventually scratch their way out? Yeah, a lot of coffins are made of metal now, but, you know, you have, you know, centuries of people who have died that were put in just pine boxes, depending on how well preserved they are. And, you know, again, do we suppose that they have any sort of supernatural strength or...
Yeah, there are a lot of questions come of that, especially when you think in terms of how long has the body been interned.
Right.
And if the body's been interned for like 100 years, then they weren't buried the same way people are buried today. This is, you know, some of the things that are done in order to, you know, intern people into the ground has been like in the last 20, 30 years that they've come up with this idea of, you know, the cement casing or the cement vault, so to speak, that goes on.
Well, and as we learned from our friend Kilawilba down in Australia, this is really a U.S. thing because down there they still use coffins, wooden coffins.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, the other thing you have to figure, is take into account, I guess, would be where does a zombie apocalypse start? Okay. if you have a patient zero, somebody that comes back for whatever reason, you know, radioactivity or, you know, just some unknown plague that gets discovered. You know, you have to do we even worry about the people in the ground? Because as we've seen in a lot of movies and I've read in a lot of books, especially in like World War Z, you know, it's not the people coming out of the ground that you have right. to worry about. It's the people who get bit and turn and then in turn bite someone else. And that's where you get the hordes of zombies. You know, it's not people coming out of the graves like we have in this movie.
Right. If you're looking at modern zombie, you know, modern zombie tales now, it isn't about the dead coming out of the ground.
It's the dead coming back to life or, right. you know, reanimating after they've been bitten or chewed on or whatever.
Well, okay, let's take this a step further then. What do you think is the most plausible type of zombie then? Is it going to be dead coming back to life I think it's probably most plausible being a rager zombie like 28 Days Later, where they're actually alive. They have all the, you can kill them just like any other human, but they have some sort of virus or something that, you know, makes them so mad, say rabies type of virus. So now we're into Wreck.
Yeah.
That, you know,
well, with Wreck too, you got to keep in mind that there was also a demon aspect to, you know, attached to it. Or a supernatural aspect attached to it. Whereas you're kind of talking about more like the zombie autopsies type zombie, where it is they said that it was attached to the way it was explained in zombie autopsies is it was flu related. And then but it does attack the rage aspect and kind of like what we talk about with the TS-19 and The Walking Dead is that, I would think that it'd be more of that type of a zombie, but mostly because we already have proof of that.
Right.
Like the whole bath salts thing.
Well, and my thing is, you know, I'm not so worried about zombies being the dead coming back to life.
Right.
For me, it's more of the viral turning people, you know, so mad, so raging that, you know, they become like 28 days later.
Yeah, which then you could ask the question then, which is scarier then? Is it the ones that come up out of the ground who are just out to eat for no reason and that's their only purpose in life? Or is it the ones that have a rage attached to it and that just seem to have this uncontrollable need to destroy everything in its path? That may be laying in, you know, on the ground next to you 1 minute and then jumping up, chasing you down the next.
I think it's the rage. I think I am not worried because really the rambling zombie, the one coming out from the ground, or the dead zombie, you know, that doesn't run or, you know, is, you know, whatever. The only way that they're really effective and that they're really scary is because they're siege warfare.
Right.
And unless there's a, you know, a group, and I would even put a number of
a horde and they overwhelm you. A horde,
yeah. You know, I don't even know what the number is right now. I think personally, without having a gun, I could probably handle 6 to 12 by myself without getting bit. But if you go above that, you know, depending on how close proximity, you know, how much movement I have, you know, if I'm in an enclosed room like I am right now, and there's more than one, maybe two or three, you know, that's a big difference than being in an open field with a dozen.
Mm-hmm. Whereas a rage zombie can chase you down because they have more strength, more speed.
Well, yeah, they're running on pure adrenaline.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then you have the other aspect of, you know, the human condition is that you run until your body runs out of ATP. And when it runs out of ATP, then your muscles get fatigued. You build up lactic acid. You can't run as hard or as fast. To where the rage zombie, they don't feel the results of ATP because they're running on, they have adrenaline pumping, which stops the lactic acid buildup.
So this could be interesting to get into further discussion with, especially when the World War Z movie comes out, because that is the route they're taking with the World War Z movie.
I think I'm going to bring this up next week on the episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review when I have Matt and Mike on from Evolution of the Apocalypse. That'll be a good one to talk about.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
And again, we can talk about this more, especially when the World War Z movie comes out, because from what I understand, the way they're handling that is that it is pretty much 28 days later zombies, only in huge numbers.
All right. And I think with that, why don't we start the music?
Right.
All right, that was our episode for Zombie 101. Don't forget to get a hold of us by giving us a call at 503-454-6941. Send us an email at feedback@creepercast.com. You can also leave us a voicemail off your computer or smartphone by going to our website at creepercast.com and clicking the little leave a message link that pops up. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast and on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. And don't forget about Google Plus. Get a hold of us at creepercast.com/G+. Jeff, can you tell people about the iTunes sweepstakes?
The iTunes sweepstakes giveaway, whatever you want to call it, is as soon as we get 25 from either our Walking Dead Week in Review or the Creepercast show, we get 25 in each one. We draw a name from each one. And you win an item out of our CreeperCast store.
All right, Mike, what do you got coming up next week?
Next week we have another graphic novel. This one is called North 40 by Aaron Williams, and it's about a little town that has a little Cthulhu problem.
All right, for a second I thought you were going to say the little town that could. All right, see you guys next week.
Night.
Thank you for listening to my uncle's podcast.